welcome to a new season of the Carrier's Edge podcast. This is episode 92, and I'm Jane Jazz Rowie, co-founder of Carrier's Edge. And with me, as always,
Mark Morrell, other co-founder of Carrier's Edge. And I have to say, you have an amazingly polished opening for a podcast.
That's because that was my second try.
It's like you've done this before. Yes, here we are in our new West Coast studio.
Yes.
Broadcasting from the ocean front.
And the basement is much nicer than our old basement.
Still in the basement.
We're still in the basement.
Either way, does not matter what happens, a musician ends up in the basement.
Hey, you're in a much nicer basement
than
you used to
be. It's a nicer basement.
Yes.
And I'm not sure it technically counts in the room that I'm in since it has a walkout. So it is ground level. It's lower ground, but still it's kind of ground level. I'll take it.
And you have windows.
I can see daylight.
Yes.
Yes. As the kids would say, I can touch grass.
Yes. Well, we do touch grass a lot more than we used to.
Yes. So we have got, one would think, a lot to talk about since we have not broadcast over the summer and we've been very busy.
We have, because we had to move to the West Coast.
Which, that was our last two episodes.
Oh yeah, that's
right. We ended the season with us finally arriving out here.
And now we have been here for what, 3.5 months or something?
Three months, yes.
Yep.
3 months we've been here. We are settled in.
Yes.
And we are West Coasters. My ponytail fits in. I'm not the only old guy with a long gray ponytail.
No, there's a lot of you around. Like sometimes I mistake you for other people because the long gray ponytail doesn't cut it.
It's not distinct anymore.
As a definer. Yeah, it's really weird. Like, well, in trucking it does.
Yes.
It's like you're one of two guys.
No, there's...
Is there a third?
There's a few. The last event that I was at, the tank truck event, tank truck carriers, and also before that, the private fleet annual conference. Both of them had like three or four people that had ponytails, and several of them were gray. So I'm not the only old crazy hippie.
Well, I don't even know if it's crazy hippie. I think it's guys who just get tired of it. Keeping your hair short is a pain in the butt, especially if you have curly hair.
Yes.
And like after a few decades, you're like, nah.
Well, what I'm finding out here is that long hair is a pain because of all the wind and all of the outdoor activities. Yes, it's constantly tangled.
Yes. And one of the outdoor activities that we've been doing a lot of is biking.
Mm-hmm.
Because biking here is so much nicer than biking in Ontario. It's so much nicer that, well, it's, well, one, there's actual bike paths.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in Toronto, I think there's a lot of bike paths.
Yeah.
We just weren't living there and we decided not, we were thinking of if we didn't move out here, we were going to move out, we were going to move down to Toronto and we would have had similar.
Some bike trails and paths, not to this degree. This is crazy.
What, the bike paths?
Yeah, there's so many trails and paths and things and bike lanes everywhere.
It is. It's very nice.
Yeah, it is very different. It totally takes us out of our headspace and into a totally new way of thinking about things.
And one of those things is the centrality of Eastern time zone.
Yes.
Which I don't know. Did I talk about this before? Because it never ceases to amaze me that we are all getting up early, way earlier than we ever did.
Yeah, time is very different here.
And it's okay.
Yeah.
But we're getting up early in order to accommodate the East.
Yeah, the Eastern time zone people, they're very much in their own world.
Spoiled.
Yes.
And we were there too. We were exactly like them.
I know, I feel very guilty. But all the times that I booked at a meeting for 10:30 a.m. Eastern and made somebody show up at 7:30 a.m. Yeah. Now, in trucking, that's the middle of the morning. I fully accept that trucking is up early all the time, but tech is not like that. And developers and graphic designers and writers are not generally early birds.
Some of them are. We have some.
We have a startling number of freaks that are up and active early in the morning, but it's uncommon. Yeah, we have more than our fair share of those. So yes, we are settled in. We are loving it out here. We are very much having a different approach to the things that we're working on. And I think one of the things that we have to talk about at the top here is best fleets to drive for.
I know. It's a little weird because I haven't been involved a lot in the opening.
Well, since our last podcast, of course, it's become public and formally known that we are split from TCA, that we are doing this program now on our own. And that has opened up a few new things, allowing us to really focus on promoting it more to the non-truckload segment of the industry and focus on, you know, bringing in more of the LTL, the tanker, these different segments that didn't really participate all that much in the past. And we would always have loved to have them in there, but being associated with TCA, I can see they saw it as a truckload thing. So yep. Now it's kind of pure. It's just, it's its own thing now, and it is open for everybody. I'm looking forward to getting more of those non-truckload segments in there, or more of the fleets that are for hire carriers that are owned by private companies, things like that, that we've got a lot more flexibility. So we opened nominations last week, and our 16th edition of the program, which is crazy.
Crazy. We've been doing it for 16 years.
Yeah.
Well, it was crazy when we were doing it for 15. 16 is not that much different.
Well, yeah, but we were in the midst of so many different things with 15.
True.
And all of that other stuff. And now it's like, oh my God, I don't know what it is. Yeah. About 16, I just, that's making me feel super old, I guess.
That is making you feel old?
Yes.
The gray ponytail isn't giving it away.
I'm used to that now. I don't know. But we're looking forward to seeing what comes out of that. We have got more things happening related to it. I'm going to be doing an education session at MCE, the ATA, big ATA event next month, talking about what we've found and over the years and why people should participate and all of that kind of stuff. So it's going to be very exciting. I'm actually kind of looking forward to it, especially because we have a lot of staff involved now, and I may not have to do many interviews.
Well, going back to your MCE presentation, you're doing that with a couple of the Hall of Famers, correct?
One Hall of Famer and one regular. So a large fleet, small fleet. I'm doing it with Prime and American Central Transport. So really nice perspective there. With Prime is a large fleet. Primarily contractors, almost all contractors, and ACT is a smaller fleet and largely company drivers, even though they're both basically in the same state. Now I'm realizing that, but they're very different. One, different sizes and different configuration. They do slightly different business as well, but they've both been involved for a long time. And they have a lot that they can contribute in terms of perspective of why they participate, what they get out of it, and how they use the information. So I think that's going to go, that's going to be a very good session.
It's not that difficult to get two fleets from two, like really different fleets, but you end up thinking, oh, okay, this is good because they're different fleets. And then you realize they're in the same geography, but they're not. What I find really fascinating about fleets is that they could be next door to each other and True. Be completely different in, you know, who their customers are, how they, you know, how their drivers work with them. Like, it's just completely different. So many of them are from Ohio.
Yeah, so many Ohio fleets. In Missouri as well, in Nebraska, there's like clusters where we have a lot of them.
Yeah, and I don't ever, and also Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't think of them as being Ontario or Ohio fleets. You just think of them as their own thing, because when they talk about their companies, it's all very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is what I like. And I think that's one of the things that I like about Best Fleets is that it really gives the company an opportunity to start defining itself
mm-hmm.
as not just being a company that's family oriented and, you know, a great place for drivers to work, but, you know, who they really are and what they're doing. So are they, you know, who are they serving and who are they focusing on and what is important to them? And, you know, do they have a big military presence? Do their drivers kind of hang out there a lot, or are they all around the country? And so there's just different things that make fleets very different from each other, even when they're close together.
That's true. Yeah. They can solve problems completely differently.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we don't have a lot of different questions this year in the program. We changed the wording on a few of them, and I think we might have added one question that I remember adding one brand new question, and now all of a sudden it's escaping me.
Is it about lease purchase? Did we do that?
We were looking at adding a question about lease purchase. Oh, I think it was something related to HR or fleet managers. I think it was something about how do you train your fleet managers, or how are you supporting their fleet managers to better support their drivers or something like that. Yeah, it is totally gone from my head at this moment.
Well, we made a lot of, like, even though we didn't really change any questions, we changed the format a little bit to mm-hmm. make it a bit easier. When you have a question that requires a number, we've given you a number field.
Yes. Now it will only take numbers.
Yes. So you can't do a it depends or a range or anything like that. If we say we want an average, you have to put in a number.
Yeah, that I think is going to be very helpful when it comes to interviews and scoring and things like that.
It's going to be really helpful for us. People really think that average, like when we say, you know, what's the average salary or the average pay, people get really wrapped up in, you know, well, this driver does this and makes this and this driver makes this. And but there's so many different things and, you know, they can go from, you know, 100 grand to 30 grand. And really what we want to know is take all of the salaries of all your drivers, add them up.
Yeah. Divide by the headcount.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people kind of miss that average word and they just, you know, what is the compensation or what are the miles or that kind of thing.
It might also be that people think it's going to be low and it's not going to.
They're always self-conscious.
Yeah.
So they have to put a bunch of qualifiers in there.
Yeah.
But we don't care. We don't score it. It's only for tracking year over year numbers. That's all we use that stuff for.
And if you don't give us an average, we'll average it.
Yeah, we'll make one up.
It's you may as well give us the accurate number.
Yeah.
Because you're going to figure out an average anyway, because that's how we compare. You can't compare numbers that are all different.
Yeah.
You can't compare a single number to a range of numbers. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, I always think of Chief Carriers on this one and Mr. Winkler, who on the question about average headcount for the year is the only person to ever give me a decimal on that. And was like 115.2 or something. That was his answer. It was like, hey, you want an average? That's the average.
Yeah.
But everybody else kind of rounds it one way or another, but he's always Mr. Precise.
I think I've seen decimals before.
Very rarely. And it's probably him, his previous job.
Yeah, I think not TSN.
Oh, TLD?
TLD, well, yeah, Nina.
Okay, yeah, another detail person.
Yeah. We know the very detail-oriented people are giving us decimals.
Yeah.
We don't need decimals. You can round up. It's all right.
So we are up and running with the 16th edition of the program. The nominations are open and they're starting to come in pretty nicely. And we are doing our normal internal pool amongst all our staff to see what we think the nomination count is going to end up as. And we've been doing this for a few years now and it's a lot of fun. Everybody gets involved. And
have we set up the channel yet?
Yeah. Yeah, it opened up last week.
Oh, I didn't even see it.
Yeah, Trish opened it up.
I've been busy.
After basically the day after nominations open, Trish put it out there. And yeah, we have a pool and whoever gets closest without going over, basic Price is Right rules. Whoever gets closest without going over wins the prize. And some people have some very high estimates, some very optimistic estimates.
They're not listening to you where you say that nominations follow the state of the economy.
Or looking at what we've done too much in past years.
Oh, are they saying like 300?
Yeah, 200, 300 and things like that. So
okay.
There's always a few people that guess really high. So now they're going to listen to this and go back and change their answers, I guess.
I am not going to do it until later.
Yeah, I have my own estimate of where I think it's going to be based on historical trends and the fact that it does tend to ebb and flow with the economy. So I think that will lead us in a particular direction, but I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to say I'll wait until later and then do something.
I think it's interesting that it follows the economy.
Yeah, you would think a good workplace is a good workplace. But if the economy is great, we get more drivers nominating their companies. And if the economy is bad, like, does the workplace get worse? I guess there's less freight. They're not making as much. They're not as happy. But the things that make somebody really good as a workplace are rarely much to do with the compensation. It's everything else that's happening. So yeah, it is kind of interesting that you would think a good workplace is a good workplace, whether the economy is good or bad.
Yeah, I don't really know why that is. I mean, it's nominations. It's not the fleet participation.
Right.
It's like drivers who actually nominate. So it's if you are, it could be that. I honestly don't know. I thought it was interesting, but like when you made that observation the first time, which was a few years ago, I didn't really pay attention to it. But, you know, since then, I've noticed that it seems to be true. And I wonder if that's like that for all the awards.
Yeah.
You know, all the awards in the industry where, you know, do people get more involved? Or is it just drivers? Maybe drivers are just, you know, when they're feeling the pinch more, are not as interested in making a big splash.
Now, that's a really interesting point about other nomination or other award programs. I guess the others don't have nominations. They're application-based typically, but they never really share how many people apply. You never see the numbers from year to year. So you don't know how many people are applying for a safety award or participating in some of these other programs. So I wonder if it goes up.
You hear rumory things about it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really get a, like no one ever comes out and says, and they certainly don't publish it.
Yeah.
On their website like we do.
We're the only ones that are publishing that. But I think a fleet getting nominated on its own is a bit of a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. If you've got drivers that are willing to say, yeah, this place is great and I want to tell the world about it, that's a good step. You're in good shape there.
That's why we started doing the nominated logos.
Yeah, for sure. And sending those out. And I think it'll be nice when we start having those going out and start seeing them on social media.
Yeah, we should start doing them soon.
I would imagine so.
I double checked that we had them today.
Yes.
So they're created.
Trish?
Trish knows.
Make sure you get those nominated logos out once they're validated.
Yes. Well, they should be out once the podcast comes out.
Yes. So yeah, we will once again be managing by podcast. Like giving people tasks.
Yep.
It's always interesting to see what happens with all of those. It will give us an indication of where the economy is going when we see the final nomination numbers. But one thing that we also are working on now quite heavily is the award presentation.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now that we're not going to be presenting it at a convention, we're going to be doing our own event.
We are.
And we can talk a little bit about that. We're not going to disclose all the details. Probably the next episode, we'll have more details on that. But it's something that has been in the works for coming up on a year. I think we've been working on this and trying to get the pieces together. It takes a long time to figure out what you want to do and how to make it all work, but we're going to have an expanded awards event that isn't just going to be about awards, it's going to be education, because there's so much information that we collect every year, and we share some of it through here, and we do some webinars, but it never feels like enough. It always feels like there's so many things we discover that we can't get through, that this will give us a nice opportunity to have an extended education session talking about that, and you can talk about the things that you find. I'll talk about some of the things I find. Some other people will talk. We got lots of opportunity to share and fill people's heads, give them the fire hose of information. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think that's going to be fun. It's going to be the beginning of April next year. So basically on the same schedule that we've been following for years, almost every year since the beginning, where we have the overall awards presented and start sharing all the findings in the spring. So we're going to be right on track with that again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's happening in the world of Best Fleets. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about the webinar that we have coming up that I'm very much looking forward to. And so this is a webinar that is happening tomorrow as we record this. But after this gets released, this episode will probably be released on Wednesday. So it will be finished. But the webinar is one I've been wanting to do for probably a year or maybe more with a lawyer to talk about the specifics of court. I go to so many of these different industry events and they have lawyers talking about, you know, they always have one part of it that is scaring the crap out of people with court and then another part of it that is what you can do to prep for it. And they always say the same thing, like it starts with policy, but then it always ends up coming down to like training and what are you doing to train your drivers and how are you making sure that they stay safe? And they always kind of have like a couple of quick bullet points about train your drivers and document it. And then they move on to something else. And I always thought that can't be all there is to it. There's got to be a lot more to that in terms of what they should be doing with the training, what that needs to look like, what kind of documentation they should have, what they should be doing afterwards. So this webinar, we're going to dig into that. So we got a lawyer, a guy I met in, I guess it was April. I did an event or beginning of, yeah, I think it was April. And I spoke at an event hosted by BFL Canada, and this guy, Kevin Mulvaney, was on the agenda as well, and he did a session, really good session, about what they're seeing currently in court cases, you know, the state of litigation. And I contacted him to see if he'd be interested in doing the webinar, and he said yes, and so now I'm really excited to dig into this.
American?
Yes. He's okay. A U.S.-based lawyer. Yeah, that's where most of the court cases are.
Right. But I just wanted to clarify that just because you met him at a Canadian event does not mean it was a Canadian lawyer.
I think he's based in Detroit.
Okay.
but he does transportation litigation. So it's perfect. And that's why it was taking me a while to get it scheduled, is I wanted to find somebody who focused on that area and...
Training, you mean?
No, focused on trucking litigation, like those two things, specialty areas. And also somebody who would speak well, who would be engaging as a speaker on a webinar, and somebody who was US-based. So he sort of checked all of those boxes, and I think it's going to be really good.
And I think that a lot of people are interested.
Yeah, we normally get about 60 or 70 people registering for our webinars. When I looked last time, it was 227.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we had to upgrade our Zoom account.
Can you upgrade it temporarily?
Yeah, I upgraded it for a month.
Oh, okay.
And well, then, so we've moved to the, the enterprise webinar version or something like that. Some different version of the account so that we can handle all these people.
Wow. That's very exciting.
It is. Now the pressure's on.
Yeah.
But it's going to be fun because I see lots of things that I think fleets do because they're trying to, they're trying to save a buck. And times are tough. Everybody wants to save a buck. I get that. But that comes back to kill you in court.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're, maybe you still make that decision because you have no other choice to keep the lights on. But at least be aware of what the risk is.
Yeah.
When you're cutting back on training, when you're doing less of it, when you're going for the free option so that you can save a few bucks here and there, the couple hundred dollars a month you save on that, going to YouTube for driver training or something can come back and kill you in court, because then it just looks like you didn't care about safety. It looks like you were doing something amateurish because you wanted to save a few bucks. And that's just deadly.
Oh, and you're going to be discussing that in the...
Yeah.
Ooh.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what they should be doing afterwards. We're going to talk about how to build, building the ideal program. So go through it and sort of step by step what they should be doing. Because also, people get tied up in thinking about training drivers just as an orientation thing, right? We bring them into orientation and then we document it. We heard from the lawyers that we got to document everything. So they do. They have all of this documentation around orientation. And then what? Right? What happens to that driver 2 years, 3 years down the road? What training are they getting? And that's an issue in court as well. That's going to come up. It's okay. You had this great orientation, but what did you do a year later or 2 years later? So when your five-year driver has a bad crash and injures people, that's going to come up in court. Is what training did they get in the last 6 months?
Yep.
What training did they get a year ago? What are you doing to continually build their skills? So that's going to be the discussion. We've got some things that we're going to talk about there. Rick is going to be on it as well, our communication specialist. He's got a bunch of questions too.
Oh, I bet he does.
He comes up with some interesting questions, and he'll talk about AI because every discussion these days must include AI.
Yep.
So, and actually that's timely because it came up in the session where I first met Kevin. He talked about it. He talked about the problems with AI and...
What? There's problems with AI?
I know. Say it isn't so. But I guess there was a bit of a precedent set where some lawyers had used AI to search for precedent in a case that they were working on and came up with all of these things and quoted them and discovered the hard way that AIs hallucinate. And... So they submitted this stuff and they ended up getting a censure or something because some of it was just completely made up. It was complete garbage. And they got called out on it in court.
Wow. And
so somebody on the other side, I guess, went to look for all of these cases that they were citing and half of them didn't exist. So these lawyers really got a bad day in court.
Well, I mean, people are thinking about using AI for training as well. And you really don't want to mess with that.
Yeah.
If you're going to create course content, don't do it with an AI.
Yeah, I don't know how anybody can trust those things until I see some good evidence that someone has solved the hallucination problem. And I see it. We have this issue with the AI-powered dash cams, and we partner with several people that have AI-powered dash cams, and those things are still learning, and there's a lot of false positives that come. On our dash cam integration, we allow people to set rules, and you can say 3 hard braking incidents trigger this intervention,
right?
And maybe it's assignment of training or something. And I think the initial thing was up to 10 events you could have as your different thresholds. And pretty much the first person who implemented it said, we need more than 10. And I'm like, what? You're allowing people to have more than 10 hard braking incidents or bad turns or whatever the case is before intervening? And they said, no, there's so many false positives that we need out of 20, there's maybe 3 that are actually legitimate.
So how are fleets trying to figure out the false positives.
They have to review every single one of them.
Oh my God.
So the AI-powered dash cams still need to have a person, checking it. And I think what's happening is the AI is learning. Every time you do that, the machine gets a little smarter, but it's a process.
Well, that's why we don't have self-driving automobiles yet.
Yeah.
Because they're just not smart enough.
As we talked about in earlier episode, the auto speed on our car and all of that stuff, the auto steer that was freaking out all the time when we were coming across the country.
Like, I've been talking about AI with other people in various places and times, and I'm always kind of coming down hard on it.
Mm.
But I think that, I know that people assume that because it's tech, and because Google is giving you the information or ChatGPT is giving you the information, that it's to be trusted because it's coming from a machine and that the machine is going to be objective and not, not going to give you anything that's biased, which is complete and utter like
rubbish.
Yes, rubbish. It doesn't, people make the AIs and AI is not infallible. And what I really have been trying to say is that don't trust it.
Yeah.
Don't trust it automatically that it's going to be completely useful in all cases. It's not at all. It's way, way too in its infancy for it to be that useful. Right now, it's almost like a toy. And it's really what it is now is kind of a way to try and make money off people.
It's a way for startups to get funding by claiming they have AI-powered something.
But also, you claim you have AI-powered something. The one thing that I know that I have been using is a stock photography site that I use all the time called iStockPhoto, and they have now a quote-unquote AI-powered, you can do some editing.
Photo editing.
Photo editing, yeah. So basically, it'll remove the background.
Which you could do in PowerPoint 5 years ago.
I know. Well,
it wasn't great.
It wasn't great.
Because it wasn't AI powered.
Well, it's a lot better, but it's not
It's just the natural evolution of things that these bits of technology get smarter when you have more data to use to filter based on.
And it's not infallible. Like when I do it on the website, it only allows me to do certain things.
Yes.
So not all pictures can be edited with AI, only certain ones.
Yeah.
And when you go into it and try and do it, you can remove the background and maybe an object, which is really, really helpful. But I'm really tired of going in to see what I'm allowed to do. So now I'm just doing it the way I've always done it, which is download the ones that I'm going to edit.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how it works. But it's the same thing with ChatGPT is that you ask it a question and, it's like a Google search. It's like a fancy Google search.
It's just taking that and stringing it together into sentences in a paragraph. So,
yeah.
And on that subject, the latest article from Joe Dysart featuring AI was in this week's Transport Topics, where he was talking about interviewing and had some quotes from you in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, he asked, like in the interview questions he sent me, he asked me about how it's non-biased and, why it's an advantage that it doesn't have any bias. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Any large language model that is being used by, being used by an AI company that is populated with a bunch of kids that are mostly fairly fresh out of school. They may be fresh out of PhD programs, but still, they've not lived. They don't have the benefit of life experience to really balance these things. It's going to be skewed in all kinds of different ways. And we've
Absolutely.
Seen tons of stories about bias in language models and bias in AI and how awful they can be. So it's not even at a beta state. Like they call it kind of a beta, but it really isn't. It's very early. All of these things are very early.
And I think what is happening now is that they're throwing in all this quote unquote AI and basically gathering more training for the AI by selling the product that's supposed to already have the AI. So really what you're doing, if you buy something for its AI, is you're helping provide the learning.
Because so many products now have got AI powered X and they're using it as an excuse to ding you for an extra buck a month for your user account. But you're right. They're just using that to train the thing. So you're paying extra to provide data that they use to train the AI that they've already sold you.
Yep. And this whole...
It's a scam.
Come and you... Well, ChatGPT did it.
Yeah.
I mean, it absolutely was like, hey, come and try this. And, you know, in its... As you try it, you train it. And one of the things that I'm trying really hard not to do is give it too much information.
Yes. Don't give it anything to work from.
I mean, I've used it. I've tested it and to see what it can do. And it's really been kind of underwhelming.
Yeah. Well, it only works when there's a whole lot of written content to surf through or a whole lot of documented content. I think this is a challenge that you found. You were testing it out a little bit on the training side, testing some of these AIs for generating content. But so much of trucking's knowledge is not written down. It's not documented anywhere. It's, I mean, a bunch of old guys talking to each other, or there may be YouTube videos, but there may be YouTube videos demonstrating it, and each of them contradicts the other.
Yep.
And then there's some more bits of information that are in comments on some discussion board that isn't being scraped by these language models. So how do you trust an AI to help you with any sort of content creation when most of the content isn't really documented anywhere?
And also, when you are trying to train for safety, you know, are you really going to take content generated by an AI that might be hallucinating? And, you know, it's like, do you want, is that what you really want? I mean, I haven't found great content coming from there. I've asked it a bunch of things. It's, I was talking to, an editor from Fleet Equipment who said that he used it for proofreading. And that's a pretty simple task. He says it's a really good proofreader.
But that's just one step above what Word does for you now.
I know. And it's just fancy Word.
And actually, it's not even Word. The browsers have it built in too.
And so it's really just fancy Google, fancy Word.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit of fanciness on top of everything. But what really drives me nuts is AI, you've got to have AI and it's got to be like this. And it's just like a real fad.
Well, we may have talked about this on the last episode. I don't remember exactly when that one dropped, but when we were at the Collision Conference at the end of June in Toronto, everybody was all AI. Every session, it was like they were required to ask about it, required to discuss it. And it really got to be tiresome because, you know, it was just a bunch of keywords that startups are all using to try and get money out of investors. And like most of them didn't really have anything. You know, what they called AI was really just a small amount of filters that are not that smart at all.
Well, we're finding that with our dash cam.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
So there's our anti-tech rant of the day.
And that's what I was trying to say, is that I'm trying not to be anti-tech because I'm not. I don't like getting on bandwagons. I hate bandwagons. I just hate them.
We've never been good at that, yes. We never want to go that direction. Well, we have in one of our core ideals of a company is we're one fad behind. We'll let somebody else be on the bleeding edge, and then when it's sorted out, then we'll look at it.
Well, then you can analyze it better.
Yeah.
Like just trying to be at the bleeding edge all the time really just kind of makes for mistakes and things that you have to redo or revisit. It's better when you are, especially in the business that we are, it's better when you can test something, make sure that it's working, and have a way to progress through it that we can repeat, and we want to have a consistent way of building these things.
Yes.
And we want we don't want to just kind of jump steps so that we can have like some sort of, you know, fanciness. We want to, you know, be very boring, but make sure that everything works.
Right. You want it to be thoughtful and have context and really be applicable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And a lot of these things, and I understand where they're coming from. A lot of these technologies or companies, they're just throwing a lot of stuff against the wall to see what sticks. They throw a lot of things out there and see, because sometimes you don't know, is this something or not? And you've got to try some of those things and see. But that's really not something that we've ever been interested in. And I think it sucks for the customers because they get sort of wrapped up in that sometimes. And then it ends up that there's really nothing there. And so then they end up having to go back and switch it out and do something different. And that's one of the things that I've always struggled with. If we're experimenting too much in areas that are going to end up causing trouble for customers, well, that's not great. I would rather go a little bit slower, try some things in a little bit, and have a lot more confidence that this is going to be the way to go. Then customers can use it with some confidence. Like they're not going to be left high and dry.
Especially with tech, I think there's just been too much of it dumped on people in the trucking industry.
Yeah, in like the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And I know we have talked about that in past episodes, about the amount of tech that's being dumped on people and drivers in particular. But yeah, the industry is kind of having to learn that you need to take it slow and have a plan for these things.
And not to listen to vendors.
Except us.
Oh, except us, yeah. But even us.
Yeah, but our whole story is basically take your time.
Yeah. Don't do it fast. Do it a little bit at a time. Make sure you have success. Do a little bit more. Make sure you have success.
Yep.
Don't just sort of dump things on people and say, okay, it's tech, therefore it's awesome. But more and more and more, I'm finding that tech is making more problems than it's solving. And, you know, I know that AI is doing a lot of things. Apparently, it's being used with diagnostic tools and helping people with various rare diseases, because the AI can focus on rare diseases. Like, there's more brain power that can actually be put to a rare disease rather than people who you don't get enough bang for your buck if it's a person.
Right.
So, I mean, there are ways that AI is helping, but what I really just hate so much is the greed factor of the tech industry.
Yeah. Well, there are places where, in theory, this stuff should be super helpful. So, yes, medical research, where there's so much happening that no human could ever go through all of that. It could never get through all of that stuff and figure out anything. That's a great place for AI, in theory. And the law is another thing, where so much of the law is based on somebody finding some precedent or finding some past case that's relevant. That is perfect for AI, in theory. Go through all of these things and find anything that's related that we can actually use. And once it gets sorted out, I think lawyers will have a very different job. But you have this issue right now where you can't even trust it. Like, that's why it's so kind of alarming that it kind of makes up its own answers.
The vetting is really important. And this is always the case. And this has always been the case with research. And, you know, are you being accurate? Are you actually saying what somebody else did? Did you cite it properly? And that's a really important part of any kind of research-based document or project or anything like that. If you're using false information as your basis, then you don't have a good product at the end.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the problem with tech, is that tech makes a lot of assumptions and likes to cut corners because they want to make money faster. And their investors are trying to get them to make money faster. So there's a lot of things that they just skip.
Mm-hmm.
And AI, I think, there's been a bit of a race for AI because the different companies that are doing it, and you know who they all are, the big ones, Microsoft, Google, or Acrobat, and whatever Elon Musk's is, he's doing it as well. But they're all just racing it's like a space race.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you're going to cut corners. You know, you're going to have a rocket explode. And I think we're just waiting for, you know, a rocket to explode because of AI.
Yeah, that's interesting. You make the point that tech is racing to do things and they'll cut corners.
Oh, they absolutely will.
But they've created an AI that does the same thing. They've created an AI that is in a race to get you answers fast and will cut corners.
Mm-hmm.
So it always reflects the people building it.
That's really important, that AI doesn't really care that much about how it gets to a goal. It cares about the goal.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't care one way or another, whether it's accurate or whether it's giving you good information or how it got there. It just is caring about getting there.
Which is why the auto drive on my car is usually reserved for when it's very safe. You know, if I'm on the highway and there's not a lot of people around, I'll put it on, but I'm basically supervising.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do the experiments that I've done. And, you know, we talked about this last time, have been, I don't trust it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, it's not as smart as me yet.
Okay. Well, let's move on to something a little bit more positive for the last few minutes and talk about, now that we're in the fall, we're getting into kind of fall show schedule and some things coming up. I mean, I mentioned my MCE thing that I'm going to be doing, but you're also going to be at an event, a very different kind of event coming up next month.
I'm going to be at DeliveryCon in Vegas in October while you're at MCE in, where are you going to be? Orlando?
Austin.
Oh, Austin.
Thankfully not Orlando. Yes. My personal objective for this year is to not go to any events in Orlando.
I thought you were.
I don't think so. No. There was one last week that Rick and Selassie were at. the Private Fleet Safety Conference. There's a couple of other events that I know are in Orlando. Actually, Celeste's back there in a few weeks for the Motor Carrier Insurance Education Forum, also in Orlando. But yeah, my objective is to not go to Orlando this year. We'll see how that goes.
You may end up in Orlando.
You go to so many things. It's like going to Nashville for events. There's like so many things there. You could set an objective to not have any events in Nashville. And I will say, when we do our Best Fleets event next April, it is not in Orlando and it is not in Nashville and it's not in Vegas.
But it is going to be at a...
It is going to be at a place that is easy for people to get to, but it is not going to be in any of those.
It's going to be very exciting.
Yeah. So yeah, you've got a Delivery Con, and tell us a little bit about what that's all about.
That is it's Heavy Duty Trucking is putting it on. It's its first one, so it's a new show, and it's about the final mile.
Okay.
You know, the vehicles and the people who are working to get your stuff from the highway to your door.
So this is a new conference dedicated to fleets that are in the final mile segment.
Yes.
Okay. So that should be very interesting. So you're speaking there. Right?
I am. I'm talking about Best Fleets. And the reason that I was asked to do this by one of the editors is because the final mile fleets are starting to have the same issues that the over-the-road fleets were having. And they are looking at driver shortage issues and not being able to find enough people. And so talking about how to get more engagement from drivers, how to attract drivers, how to retain them once you've attracted them, that kind of thing. It's all kind of the same thing. It's people who drive and want to work for a company that treats them well.
Well, that's interesting. And it's not actually Heavy Duty Trucking. I think it's Bobbitt Media. Who's the parent?
Oh, sorry. I always think Heavy Duty Trucking, but it's Bobbitt Media.
Yeah, yes. But they have magazines for these other types of fleets. And I find it interesting, but also not that surprising that so many of the things that the Best Fleets are doing that are working really well work in fleets of all kinds. It doesn't matter if you're long haul, short haul. It doesn't even matter if you're tractor trailer or straight truck or sprinter van. All of these things tend to work.
And what I think is interesting, it works for non-vehicle oriented companies as well. There's a lot of things that come out of the Best Fleets that we've adopted.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's just about creating a good workplace. And the fundamentals of creating a good workplace don't really change from one industry to the other. I mean, it's going to change a little bit in you know, is everybody at the office? Is everybody not at the office? What's happening? What do you do in a day?
The specific things that you might be measuring as in your performance management program may change. But the fact that you have one and that you communicate in a particular way and you have those discussions with drivers about setting objectives, those are going to be the same regardless of where you're at.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's white collar, blue collar, it really doesn't make a difference. And I've really found that, you know, I could talk about good workplaces to anybody from anywhere. Hmm. And it will really be about people.
Okay.
Because what you're doing when you have a workplace and you're leading a workplace is you're basically, Tiffany and I call it recess duty. Mm. And it's really, you know, you basically go out into, you have this group of people and you have to manage all of their conflicts, all of their desires, all of their roadblocks, all of the obstacles, all of, you know, so that all of these things have to be managed. And if you are not managing it in a well thought out way, it's going to be chaotic.
Mm.
So everybody can just end up in chaos if you don't manage your performance and your employees.
Okay.
It's fun times.
So you're going to be talking about that at DeliveryCon in the middle of October.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. Well, I think that kind of brings us to the end. So we have got through our first episode here in our new studio.
Yes.
Works pretty well.
We'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll have to see what Carly says.
Yeah, Carly will be the deciding factor.
Yeah, so thanks everybody for listening and have a great day.
Have a good one.